So you're in France right at the moment. Is there such a thing as a French bluebell?
Oh, blooming heck, yeah, blue and white. So in France, they're called clochettes, and there are a lot of them. I always thought bluebells were just an English thing, but they're bloody everywhere here. But what we're not seeing, or what I haven't seen yet, is these great carpets of bluebells in woodlands. You get more clumps, and you get a lot on roadside verges as well. But as I say,
Right.
I've more white bluebells than I've ever seen. But I think it's like we've talked about before, you get good years and bad years for like poppies and orchids and all that sort of stuff. This year is an extraordinary year for bluebells in France and orchids. The roads.
And here in Wiltshire.
Yeah, well, of course. But I've take your word for that. But yeah, the roadside
Yeah.
verges, bluebells, orchids. We've got early purple and green winged orchids everywhere. In fact, the early purples are dying back now, whereas I think they're a bit. I think we're sort of a little bit further ahead than Wiltshire in terms of the seasons. But yeah, it's stunning, isn't it?
It is. And actually, I've, in Wiltshire, in my wanderings over the last couple of weeks, I've seen more Spanish bluebells. They're a thing now in the English countryside.
Oh, I've got them in my garden.
The interlopers.
Yeah, they go everywhere.
Yeah, but you planted them. It's your fault.
Well, I did.
So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. 3 weeks since our last one, actually, because we're kind of getting realigned around this new schedule of one a month. My name is Glyn Coy. I am the person behind Hidden Wiltshire. And with me, as usual, I have my podcasting buddy.
Monsieur Paul Timlett.
Indeed, the monsieur is very relevant right now because we're recording this in that strange scenario around this time of year where I'm stuck in Wiltshire and you're stuck in France.
Yes, although on a glorious sunny day like today, I wouldn't call it stuck. Mind you, looking at your picture, you've found a glorious sunny day there as well.
Yeah, I'm being shone on by sunbeams and sun rays.
Yes, there's a
Of
little.
course, people listening to this can't see this because this is a podcast medium, not video.
I can, I, but I can
But
see the
yeah,
shaft of light picking out the right-hand side of your face, whereas I'm sitting in the attic, which feels like the attic of my house. Not quite in the dark, but I've got a skylight above my
Your
head. So,
chateau.
and
Your...
my chateau, yes, my crumbling ruin. I spend
Your
more
money
time.
drain.
Yes, my sink. It's worse than having a yacht. Not that I've ever had a yacht, but so I'm told, or a racehorse. I'm told horses are very expensive to run as well. But yeah, we're sort of constantly patching bits up and putting the roof back together. And had a build around this morning to try and stop the water coming in through one of the bedrooms. But yeah, it's been 15 years of trying to hold the thing together. Anyway, it's a lovely part of the world, so can't complain.
Yeah, and normally at this point we talk about what we've been up to over the last 2 or 3 weeks in Wiltshire, but
Well, my bit's
have you even
easy.
been in
Nothing.
Wiltshire
I
the
haven't
last two
been
or
in
three weeks?
Wiltshire.
Yeah.
So, well, by the time this comes out, I've been here exactly 2 weeks. So, I did do some
Yeah.
stuff in Wiltshire since the last podcast, which we can talk about.
Yeah.
So, my other trusted buddy Stu and I did a walk up to Groveley Wood, which we did or I did a blog about, and had some. It was a bit of a grey day, so the photographs weren't great. We started at Langford Lakes, which I hadn't realised when I wrote the blog. I hadn't realised I'd forgotten that you'd written a blog about Langford Lakes probably 2 or 3 years ago, because there is a blog about Langford Lakes on the.
Longer than that.
Oh, is it
Yeah,
really?
years ago.
Goes right back to the beginning. So
Yeah.
we started our walk down at Langford Lakes, but the whole objective of the day really was to go up to Groveley Wood. But Langford Lakes is just stunning, and it's not that hidden. Plenty of people know about it, but it's surprising how many or how few people actually know about it, or sorry, actually go there. That's what I'm trying to say, waffling here. So plenty of people know about it, but not so many people go there. And it is a terrific facility now. And even though it's quite close to where I live and where my next door neighbour Stu lives, neither of us have been there for years. And there's a brilliant cafe there now. I mean, the cake is just awesome. And we very nearly sort of just stayed there all day, because it's got like a sort of deck outside the cafe, and you look over one of the lakes and you can just sit there drinking coffee and eating cake and watching the bird life. That was terrific. But yeah, we did eventually get up to Groveley Wood and had a really good day up there. And if you read the blog on the website, and I will link to it in the show notes, we made a really interesting find up there, and not a thing but a person. So you can read all about that on the blog, and it's probably worth doing a podcast about Groveley Wood at some point in the future. Again, not yes. hidden, but there are hidden aspects to it, and it is a stunning place. And you've got
we've done one on the Great Ridge, haven't
we? We have, yeah,
which is the sort of next wood long,
so we
can still on a Groveley.
That's point. Right, and they kind of they almost link up. But again, the historical features up there, the monuments they're just everywhere. And it's only when you start to put a walk together and you look at an OS map and you think, oh, wow, I didn't know that was there, and I didn't know that was there, and I didn't know that was there. And there's just stuff everywhere on that part, those hills above the Wylie Valley. And Elaine Perkins had written a blog, I think it was just before I came to France, about Sherrington and Boyton, and I mean, she posted about a motte in Sherrington. I had no idea it was there. And then up on the hills, I mean, it's just everywhere. But we went to on the Groveley Wood Walk. There's a place called Hanging Langford Camp, which there's not much to see, but extraordinary complex series of earthworks and settlements up there. And just below it, another place called Church End Ring, similarly complex. I mean, we say it time and again that the human habitation going back to prehistory in our part of the world, in some places there were more people then than there are now. And, anyway, I won't spoil it too much. But yeah, going back to the bluebells theme, seen some great photographs on the Facebook site. There's yours of Oakfrith Wood, because you've been up over that way again, haven't you, to Urchfont?
Yes, I did the part of the Folly Wood Walk again, just out of interest, really. I didn't do the whole bit of it. I cut out the bit that connects with Salisbury Plain and just did a sort of quick circuit back to Urchfont. But yeah, Oakfrith Wood was delightful. It's full of bluebells at the moment. And I did wonder, once I got down through the other side of Folly Wood, when we talked about this and posted about it before, we talked about the fact that there was an old moat just on the way to Potterne Wick. And I took a quick dive into there, probably a bit naughty because it's on private land, and I had to sort of get off the track and go walk about 3 or 4 metres across the field.
Yeah,
over no crops, though.
Yeah, it's no
distance. And I had a peek inside the moat area. Yeah, I had a peek inside the moat, and it was absolutely carpeted with bluebells. It was really beautiful sight.
Yeah, I went to that one this time last year when it was, or whenever the bluebells appeared last year, and it was stunning. It's quite a small area, isn't it, that moat? You know, for those who don't know, it was the gatekeeper's lodge for the deer park that belonged to the Bishops of Salisbury, going back to whenever that was. What it dates to. But they had this huge, there was a Bishop of Salisbury had a palace in Potton, and then the deer park to the east and southeast of Potton, and then the lodge, the gatekeeper's lodge. I mean, it must have been a pretty significant lodge to have to warrant a moat as well, unless it was to keep the deer out. I don't know. It is. When I went last year, it was stunning. And in fact, there was a deer in there. I spooked a deer who was not happy to see me. It, you ever hear a sort of, it was a stag. It was only a roe deer, so not very big, but it was kind of right roaring at me, like, get out of my wood. It's beautiful.
One other thing which is quite pleasant in the Wiltshire landscape at the moment is rapeseed. It's really bright yellow at the moment, very fragrant, and there seems to be a lot of it around. Much more of a rapeseed crop this year. It's my impression anyway. I don't know whether that's true. I think we've talked about this before. We talk about every year.
we do talk about bluebells every year as well. But I think rapeseed is kind of, it's a bit Marmite, isn't it? Because, I mean, certainly my wife, it just triggers hay fever in her, and she just, I mean, she finds it really, intrusive is the right word, but it really affects her.
I was walking past a rapeseed field last weekend, literally alongside it, and the fragrance from it was almost overpowering.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And I was thinking at the time, I thought, thank God I don't have hay fever. I would be screwed right now.
Just on the subject of bluebells again, I mean, so, you know, it was Oak Frith Wood, there was the moat at near Potton. Elaine had posted some pictures of Bentley Wood. And I think that was the difference that struck me about here in France and there in Wiltshire, that the woodland here tends to get it, because we're in the very, very northern tip of Dordogne, where I can walk into Charente and Haute-Vienne from where our house is. And the Department of Dordogne had an initiative to get landowners to manage woodland better. And because of French inheritance laws, people all over the place own little parcels of wood, and they all merge one into the other. And friends of ours down the road here, Christophe's got a wood, and it's mostly chestnut around here. And then his wood adjoins somebody else's, and it all just merges into one huge forest. But the department was trying to encourage people to manage the woodland better and exploit the woodland. But historically, what has tended to happen, trees fall as they do in the wind, and they just leave them, which is great for habitat. And this is why we get so many wild boar around here. They can secrete themselves away or hide away. But it's almost impenetrable. And I was trying to take bluebell photographs the other day in the valley, because we're at the top of a hill, and I went down to the valley to the river. And I got so deep into a wood, I mean, I almost couldn't get out. I got not completely lost, because I had a compass with me, but just getting through it. And that's why I think you don't get these big great carpets of bluebells, because you haven't got the big open spaces. There were some areas, and I've yet to process the photographs I took, but it's much more, the canopy is more dense. They haven't got the sort of open space to sort of develop as a carpet of bluebells, so they're more clumps. So it's not as striking as it is in Wiltshire and other parts of England. I've seen some great pictures from Sussex as well, from a couple of people on Instagram that I follow. Not seen any Spanish ones though, so you'd think we'd get to, I think they get Spanish bluebells in France, as it's a bit nearer than the UK, but
yeah, strange, isn't it?
Yeah. I think this time of year we ought to rename the podcast to the Bluebell podcast, as opposed to the Hidden Wiltshire podcast.
Bluebell Watch.
Bluebell Watch, yes. What other news? Well, you haven't been in Wiltshire either. You went away. You went to Dartmoor.
I went to Dartmoor for a week. That was very nice, actually.
Yeah, pictures look great.
Yes. Yeah. I've never been. I've passed through, but never stopped and had a proper look. So we had a week actually on the moor itself, and lots of walking from the front door. It was nice to get away. But also nice to get back to Wiltshire again and just feel grateful really that here in the southwest, we wherever you go, it's beautiful countryside. Very lucky.
And on that subject, we've knocked together a new program of guided walks with Wiltshire Museum. So
yes,
I think looking at David Dawson's emails, I think they're about to publicise that, aren't they?
Yes, within the next week or two, the program will be published, and starting from I think it's first week of June onwards, we'll have these walks in place. So yeah, watch this space on that.
And I think the first walk, is it the Hippenscombe walk? That's early June, isn't it?
Oh, no, you're testing me, aren't you?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
You're testing me.
It's just
Let's not spoil a surprise.
No, well, I already have, unless you edit this out. But, yeah, it's a sort of place close to my heart, so that'd be a nice one to do that. But, yeah, I think that's... I haven't really got much else to report.
Okay, well, we've got a bit of a surprise this week, because after the music we'll let you know what that surprise is, but we have another guest on, so really looking forward to this one. Okay, so this week we have a guest, but the guest isn't in our, in inverted commas, studio. The guest is actually outside in the field. And we recorded this a few weeks ago, actually. But we went over to All Cannings and met up with Tim Dore, who, amongst many things, has got a long barrow.
As you do. He could have spent his money on a yacht, but he spent it on a long barrow.
Exactly. He's built a long barrow from scratch. So there's a fascinating story behind it, but we actually went inside with him and just have a listen, see what you think. So I'm here with Paul this morning on another field trip on the outskirts, I think, of All Cannings, isn't it?
Yeah, it's All Cannings over there.
But we're in the foothills of Pusey Downs, really. You can see Rivalry Camp, the White Horse, Adam's Grave in the distance. But this morning we're here with local landowner and farm owner Tim Dore. So good morning, Tim.
Good morning to you.
And we're in a strange situation. We're actually stood outside a long barrow, and normally the long barrows we find in Wiltshire are quite ancient, but this one is not so old, is it?
No, the first modern one.
Yeah,
that's 7-8 years old.
Is it just your website? You called it, is it Novolithic? Is it Novolithic?
Novolithic, yes.
Novolithic, so yeah.
Trying to make up a new name for it.
Oh, you made that up. That's brilliant. Oh, it's brilliant. It's completely apt, appropriate.
The new age.
Yeah, the new age.
Well, other people have called them Neolithic, so I thought, well, let's try something else. Yeah. But, yes, it looks like a Neolithic monument, but we were trying not to copy any particular long barrel or anything else, but we want the stonemason was particularly strong about the techniques and the feeling had to relate to the Neolithic age. And there's nothing about this long barrow that the Neolithic builders of Adam's Grave or West Kennet Long Barrow wouldn't recognise and wouldn't know how to do. Obviously, it's a bit easier if you've got a 20-ton dumper truck to bring the chalk instead of baskets and JCBs. But there's no concrete, there's no rebar, there's no fancy engineering. It is just pure stonework. Just
unbeautiful. It's dry stone walling, isn't it? So we stood by the entrance looking at the corridor into the mound, and I'm looking at all stones here, and it looks like a dry stone wall.
The outside where we stood is large sarsen stones, which came from up near West Woods.
Same place as Stonehenge, then?
Same place as Stonehenge, yes, which we didn't know at the time. They're not shaped in any way. Very hard to shape Stonehenge. The one thing I do say to everybody is they're very, very hard. The entrance is also very low, so you'll probably hit your head on the way out. So I think on my tombstone it's going to say, mind your head, because I'll say that to everybody.
So I'm just curious, I mean, what gave you the idea to build it? I mean, it's a monumental thing to do, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. It was a combination of several things. One, I've lived all my life here in All Cannings. I've been surrounded by the Neolithic monuments and the other history of the area all my life and being impressed. And you can't help but sort of think, might be quite nice to leave my mark as well. And we talked about building a mound on Tan Hill at one stage. And then I was working at Stonehenge. I was very lucky to work down there. And the conversation quite often came up about what you do with cremated remains. We sadly had people who'd come to Stonehenge and wanting to scatter their ashes within the stones, which is a big no-no, and we'd had to deal with that. And somehow all these conversations came to me. I thought, well, what if we built a barrow that people could then put cremated remains in? And would it work as a centre of solace and remembrance and somewhere that people can get to? And in fact, we've sort of gone down that way. It's a place of worship as well, because it's a way of remembering people. And that's why this is a fantastic site for it, which I discovered long after I had the idea, where you can come and, you know, on a day like today, you can just sit on the stones outside or sit on the top and have a picnic and just have those thoughts. Whether or not, you know, your loved ones are inside, but it's a place of remembrance like that.
So this piece of land, did you own this before, or did you have to buy it? Okay.
Yes, I own this.
Because I was thinking about planning permission. How on earth do you get planning permission to do something like this?
The planning, I had this great idea, and we talked a lot about it, and I thought, well, maybe I'll try to get planning permission. They'll turn me down, and then I'll be able to bore people for the rest of my life about what a great idea I had, but those, you know nothing, so the council turned me on
wouldn't
down.
Let me do it.
Yeah, wouldn't let me down. But it just sort of sailed through, which was bizarre, because you know, it's a very protected landscape. And what's even stranger is various other people, since I built this, have been trying to build barrows in other parts of the country, and they have had all sorts of problems getting planning applications. maybe Wiltshire Council is far better than I thought they were going to be.
It would be a surprise. Because on your website, there's a list of other barrows, isn't there? I think, are people sort of coming to you now and asking how to do it?
Yes, normally they come to me, and I'm very happy to help in any way I can, or I learn about them. And I've been able to show them pictures of this and show them what the parking and how it works.
Yeah.
That's obviously for planning particularly. I mean, that was the other thing. We didn't have a photo of a modern barrow to show anybody.
No,
to say,
there aren't any.
No, this is what it looks like. And I hope that you agree with me. I think it fits in the landscape.
Oh, absolutely. Well, as we were chatting before, I didn't even notice it. But the first time I came here, I walked straight past it.
Yeah,
definitely blends in.
So I'm just curious, I mean, how does one get interred in here? I mean, is it sold out?
Yeah, it is sold out. What we we've got, when you go inside, you'll see that there's chambers, and in the walls there are niches, square boxes where you can put urns. And that's how we funded the building of it, by selling those leases on those niches. And they were all reserved within 2 years of us doing it. It was so, it just hit the nerve so well, which was a great, great surprise and a great relief to me, and also to my bank manager.
But I've seen photos of you that you put on social media of this around the solstice. So it's aligned in a certain way.
Yes, we're just standing by the entrance. And if we looked out the entrance, looked over to the southeast, on midwinter's solstice morning, the sunrise over Everley, which is about 11, 12 miles away, comes streaming over the Vale of Pusey, straight down the passageway and hits the end wall. We'd been out here for 2 winters before we actually built it, putting posts in the ground to make sure we aligned it properly. And then as soon as we started building it, we ran over the post with the JCB. So it was just a little bit that first winter solstice, you know, have we got it right?
Yeah.
And we have. And as you say, there's photographs on social media. There's even a short video. It's just spectacular when it happens. And so, yeah, so we're aligned with the solstice. And of course, we're also aligned midsummer with the sunset, which goes down the other end as well. So, yes. And this is why we have, you know, we have druids come at the solstice and equinoxes, because we've got that connection. But it's very much a place for people with no religion, any religion, whatever. Yeah. You know, we're not restrictive in that way.
So how long did it take from the sort of perhaps first submitting the planning to Wiltshire and completing it?
I think we did the planning the summer before we built it. The next step was building control. If you've ever done any housing or build any planning, you know, after you get planning application, you then have to do building control, which is often harder than planning. And I rang them up, and he said, "Oh, you'll need fire escapes and low level lighting." And
fantastic.
I said, "Well, he said, can I ring you back? I've not dealt with one before." I said, "Yes, you've not dealt with one before." But we came back. It's a structure, not a building, so we were fine. And then one of the first amazing coincidences, there was a stonemason living up in Bedfordshire. He's Welsh. He was on holiday. He happened to pick up a copy of the Times, which had an article about this strange planning application. They got in contact with me and said, "We know how to build this. Are you interested?" And I'd just spent 2 months trying to work out, did anyone know how to build it? Who was going to build it? And this was just a wonderful thing. And this was Geraint and Martin, and they came and showed me what their ideas were. And they were so much better than anything I'd ever imagined, as you'll see when you go inside. And it just clicked together. There were so many things that did click together, including suddenly these sarsen and stones turning up, which I'd also spent months looking for, and then suddenly I found a source. But we broke ground on winter solstice morning, December the 21st, and we had...
Which is this?
That was 2013.
13.
Yes. Wow. I'm getting old, I can't remember 1 year. Yeah. 2014, we built it, and... we opened, had the opening day in September on the equinox 9 months later, and it was all wet and mud. It was the wettest, horriblest year, and it didn't look anything like this for a year until we settled down. So 4 or 5 months of actual dry stone walling, shaping and all the rest.
So looking at it now, I mean, it's covered in grass, it sort of blends into the landscape. When you first built it, was it white? Was it just a chalk mound?
Yes, it was a chalk mound, and a lot of people talk about long barrows being left as white chalk mounds. I'm not completely convinced, because when you're building a chalk mound, especially by foot, it gets muddy and squashed down with a lot of people walking up and down with baskets. This was quite white because we got chalk and we had a big digger and they were bringing it in like that. We then covered it with, just put the topsoil we'd taken off, back very thin layer, and then we seeded it with wild grasses, wildflowers and stuff like that. Yeah. And it took a while, but it's there now. Yeah,
nature will do whatever it's going to do.
Yeah.
So do you think then that somewhere like West Kennet, I'm just trying to think, what they must have just left it white. Good people say, well, they would have stood out in the landscape. And
I think it would have been left white. I don't think they'd have put the soil back on, but it wouldn't have been white for very long.
No.
It's surprising. We had a pile of spare chalk, more chalk than we needed, and within 4 or 5 years, that had greened up, even though it was just very plain. So they might have. Like we do with the white horses.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Yeah, cleaned it.
It doesn't say white very long unless you do some maintenance on it.
But this long barrow is like a lot of the other long barrows. Is they look their best from the side.
Yeah.
You're looking up a hill. West Kennet, you think about that. You look at this, you see it on the horizon. We're looking across at Adam's Grave. We're looking at the side view. Yeah. And you can imagine if that was white, wouldn't that show up? So they might have done, I think the jury's out on that one.
I think we've talked to, say, David Dawson at Devizes. He's talked to us about it's standing out on top of the hill, because we're looking at Adam's Grave, it's on top of a hill. This is by the canal, it's low down, so it would have really stood out up there, and that was intended.
It's actually surprising, I didn't realise it until we built this, what a little hill this is on.
And actually, it is on a rise, is it?
It is on a rise. Yeah. You look round.
Yeah. I'm looking down to that lady walking across the footpath there. We're looking down towards it.
You're looking down most of the way, and from the road as you drive along, it's actually on the top of a little rise. And if you were down in Allington Village, job to see through the hedges, it's quite a rise. I thought this was, even though I farmed this all the time, I always thought this was a bit of a flat field, just up and down a bit. And hadn't realised what a great top of a little hillock this is.
Yeah.
And so we do get that side view. We do get it standing out. So that's one of the things.
Should we go and have a look inside?
Yeah, let's go and have a look inside.
Right, just before we go in, I said that the entrance stones are all sarsen stones. They're very, very hard. And the entrance is actually very low. So you will hit your head, particularly on the way out.
Or even me.
Even. I always wear a hat. For lovers of classical architecture, we actually made the entrance 1.61:1, the golden ratio, the same as Georgian ratios.
All right.
Which is why I think when you look at the entrance, it looks pleasing because it's the right ratio. That's my excuse for having it low. Other people say it's because you should stop and sort of bow as you go in anywhere.
Right.
And the cynic would say it's because we were running out of stones. But and then as you look in, there's a sort of a 10-foot open bit of corridor before we come to an iron gate, which we keep locked for the security and the privacy of people inside, which has got a non-symbolic symbol on it.
Right. It's a very, very attractive symbol, and I did wonder what that meant, but nothing.
It means different things to different people. I didn't want a religious symbol because it's not, wanted to be able to anyone. And I came up with something that looks like it should mean something. It's actually based on DNA.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
Because I thought DNA is actually sort of the life force that never dies, that goes through our body, our bodies are temporary vessels for the DNA that's lived for millions of years. So I thought that everlasting life, that's just my fancy bit. But
super idea.
Other people have seen different things in it. So
just before we go in, looking at the stones at the entrance, was there much shaping required? Did the stonemasons have to shape much here? Or did they just, like a stone waller does, he looks at what is available and he uses the stones accordingly.
The sarsen stones are no shaping at all.
Because they're so hard.
So hard. Yeah. And we've actually got sarsen stone walling before the doorway. There's a graduation in how the stones go, which we had to get a specialist stonemason into stone waller to do, because that's a different technique to the dry stone walling, where they do shape the stones.
Oh, right.
Where they have a hammer and they'll knock bits off.
Knock corners off.
Yeah. So there's a non-shaped. And interestingly, the dry stone waller who did the walls wouldn't do the floor, which is why the floor's so awful, because he said he didn't know how to do a floor. He could do walls, we couldn't do... I thought he'd just lie down, but... Anyway, so just mind, it's a little bit rough, a bit low. I'll go and open the gate and we'll go on in.
Fantastic.
Thought it... Well, than I expected. Now, these sort of vaulted ceilings are just... I don't know how they do it. It's just incredible.
So this is a corbelled ceiling.
Yeah.
So slightly different from a dome is that it's self-supporting all the way up.
Yeah.
It's used in places like Newgrange and even slightly in West Kennet, of you just keep bringing the stonework in as you're going up. I think this is probably one of the finest corbelled roofs in dry stone walling. Remember, this is not supported by concrete. There's no concrete holding it. This is the stone shaping and placing. And it just goes all the way up, and then you have a flat stone at the top, which is the size of the stonemason's middle, where he stood, and he couldn't go any further up, and you put a stone on the top. So I'm glad you say it's bigger. I mean, this is the theatre of the place, in a way. Yeah. It's very rough and small outside, and I'll leave you to describe how you feel it inside. But inside, it's big, and it's very fine stonework, but still very natural.
Yeah. As we're sort of looking, it connects through to the next chamber.
Yes, we're in the very first room.
Right.
Chamber. And this one has got a smaller extra little chamber of the.
That's got an antechamber. So, and then there are others. Well, we'll see in a minute. Further down.
I mean, if you want to stick your head in that one and see that was the very first one we built.
This one.
Yeah. I remember this was the first one we built, and we thought, wow, that's huge. That roof, just amazing. Because it was the biggest. He wanted to build that one first, because first time he'd done one more.
Practice. And then,
once you got to this one.
That's so the stones are very slightly damp. It's a bit like being in a cave, isn't it, really?
Yes. Yes, we didn't put a damp course over, but we wanted to keep it natural. And in fact, I was in here the other day when it was raining very hard. We've had those very wet days and it was quite wet. But we also, you can see your breath here today. In the spring, it's very cold in here. It takes months for it to get as warm as outside. So during the spring, everything's covered in condensation because it's so cold in here. Yeah. In the autumn, it's lovely. Yeah. Winter time, it's lovely and warm, and we get butterflies coming in here because it's a nice warm cave.
So do you warn people about that? So when they put their sort of loved ones' ashes in here, I mean, do you say no wooden boxes because it will just rot?
Yes, I do say it, but people are free to do what they like. We do say try ceramic or metal, and we have handmade ceramic ones.
Yeah.
We have all sorts of different choices. We've been very non-prescriptive.
There's still a lot of empty niches, isn't there? These people need to get a move on. Otherwise, there'll be squatters.
I always say it's really nice that I don't see the customers because we don't want even some of the ones that look like they are filled are actually people have just thought ahead and put a stone. There's one stone there. You'll see that he's got his birth date on there, but he's left a blank a bit further down.
To be agreed.
Yes. TBC, whatever. Yes. It's lovely that we have got so many empty ones.
You don't get any sort of sense, because when I came here before and just looked in, I thought, it's going to be a bit spooky in there. But you don't get any sense of that at all, do you?
I'm glad you say that. I was worried it would feel claustrophobic something like that.
It feels quite sort of, I don't know, joyous. It's like a place to celebrate life, isn't it?
And most of the ceremonies we have here, they turn into a celebration of life.
Yeah.
They provide that final closure. And you know, people will come here, go for a meal in the pub and a drink and a remembrance and stuff like that. They're often, you know, as joyful as you can be in those things, which is lovely. And you'll have young children running around and stuff outside. Lovely.
Yeah. No dogs.
So, sorry, a small diver. Just before we started building it, I'm a small businessman, and I had a VAT inspection, you know, the bane of all small businesses. And a woman from the VAT office came and I said, first thing she said, I see on the papers that you're planning to build a long barrow. I said, yes, but, you know. I said, right, I've got a couple of leaflets for you. We've got this plan. And they had leaflets about the VAT and capital taxation treatment for columbarias and stuff like this, which is quite good. It was all there, all prepared. They're very organized.
Yeah.
I said, you're not going to let people... it's not for pets, is it? I said, no. So, no, well, if it was pets, it would be 20% VAT. if it's you, it's exempt. So
they thought of everything, haven't they?
Yeah. The VAT rules are quite strange. So whilst no one's officially got a pet in here, if there's a little box alongside an urn, I don't know what's in there.
And you're not going to test it.
No, I'm not going to test it. Can I just show you a couple more things in the corridor? So do mind your head.
Yeah.
So now your eyes have got light. You can see... You'll see the sun shining down the corridor. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a line particularly, but it's surprisingly bright.
It is, There's a candle flickering at the end, which is offering up very little light at all. But this is all sunlight.
Yeah.
And it's not even not that particular. Alignment.
No,
you know.
Lovely.
So this must be incredible at the solstice.
It is very good too. So. Just because we could, we built in a few little extras. There are a few. There's a above your head. You just sort of missed it. There was an ammonite for people just round the corner. People who've been to Stony Littleton Long Barrow. There's an ammonite in the entrance.
Right.
We put one up.
Yeah. And where is that?
Just go back a little bit further. No, back down the corridor. You'll see it right up on the top there. Little nods to Stonehenge. There's some spotted dolerite. And some Kragerosafelin rhyolite. These are the two main bluestone types that you find at Stonehenge. Right. That's the one that's too soft to have survived, particularly at Stonehenge.
That's a really vivid blue as well, isn't it? I mean,
it's a deep
blue, compared to the
surprisingly,
limestone.
When we put it in, it was all that grey colour.
It's
the damp or something has turned it that lovely blue, which is nice.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and again, just a... The odd sarsen stone that feels right, and even a little bit of a little flint from Stonehenge here. And the stonemasons were very kind to me because I have a theory about Stonehenge which I can bore people about how the main biggest trilithon is skewed by 10 degrees so it matches the sunrise and the sunset. There's an 80 degree angle that you're seeing things like the bush barrow lozenge and stuff like this. And so the bottom two monoliths in the corridor, they skewed by 10 degrees.
All right,
so you'll see that it doesn't follow the corridor
following that
line, which is gives it another alignment.
So how many chambers are there all together?
So there's four main chambers, and then that's one small extra chamber as well.
Right.
And there's also niches in the corridor.
Yeah.
One thing we have got is what in archaeology you'd almost call grave goods.
Yeah.
People are putting things that remind them of... themselves, like decanter. There's a dog collar and some reading glasses, yeah. You know, little mementos and all sorts, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
And to have a space where people are free and feel enabled to do that is lovely.
Not enough room for a chariot, though, in it. A small car. Yeah.
This one here's my stone. There you are.
Ah, that's where you're going.
That's where I'm going. That's just a natural sarsen. It was that shape and size. Not really shaped at all. I found it in the field a few years ago, and I carried it across and tried it in the space, and it fitted so well, I thought.
Again, the colours on that are incredible, aren't they?
Yeah.
I noticed, actually, when I was walking, approached it from the back, from the road, how long it is. The size of it is enormous. I mean, what's the actual length of it?
It's 70 metres long.
70 metres, wow.
Yeah, about... nearly 5 metres, 4.5 to 5 metres tall.
Yeah.
So it is, you know, it is a big one. But again, the chambers only go back about 20-odd metres.
Mm,
mm. So you know, it's got a long empty tail.
Yeah.
Which is important in a way, because to memorialise people or anything like that, there has to be an element of the unnecessary about it. It can't just be utilitarian.
Yeah.
It's a strange concept that you see, why does this work? And you think, yes, it's because it's a little bit extravagant, a little bit big. You're saying, you know, we've made the extra effort because the people we're remembering here are worth remembering.
Yeah. Might just have a walk on top, see what the
views
like.
Yes, the views are... Yeah. There's actually a post put up by the local tourist board, which shows you where you can actually, it shows you what hills you can see from the on the top. The slope can be quite slippery, like any grass slope.
Yeah.
So you know, we do say care, but it's a lovely dry day.
Yeah.
And you're fit, young, and active with your right shoes on, so suddenly you really are. On a high spot in the middle of the vale, aren't you?
You are.
You don't expect this from...
No.
Didn't expect this when we were building it. We didn't realise the view down to that valley down there, all across what's called Canning's Marsh, divisors, and the whole horizon.
Yeah, so we can see all the way over to Morgan's Hill in that direction, all the way over to Woodborough Hill in that. The other direction, it's and everything in between.
Yes, and behind Woodborough Hill, you can see the trees on top of Pewsey Hill.
Yeah.
Just to orientate yourself. You sort of get also a picture of how I said it wasn't on a small rise rather than a hill, but how the ground does slope down in all directions from here.
Yeah.
In fact, when you get to the summer, you almost have to queue to be able to picnic up here sometimes.
Really? It's become a bit of a magnet, has it? For
people? It has. Partly for people who've got some connection.
Yeah.
It's just the right distance from the village of All Cannings, which we're looking down at, sort of half a mile away. So it makes a nice little walk up from All Cannings. There's a good track.
Yeah.
Get to the Barrow round and back out. And also we have this byway that goes alongside it, which is part of the new circular Pewsey Vale walk they've just been releasing. So that goes alongside there. There's a King Alfred cycle route, which is sort of Winchester round the hole. That comes by it. In fact, we've just had a cyclist draw in here. So we get a lot of people passing.
Yeah.
When you were building it, did you obviously you're putting a lot of soil back on top? Was there a sort of a ditch around it that you had to backfill? Or?
So yes, we're going to confuse people because we didn't ever build the ditch.
Right.
Because I was able to get the chalk came from my neighbour's farm where he was digging a big hole.
Oh, okay.
Well, again, one of these coincidences. I said, well, we're going to have to dig a big ditch. He said, oh, we're going to have thousands of tons of chalk. And I think if we had to dig a ditch, maybe the barrow would have been smaller because it would have been a massive ditch. Interestingly, it seems all the new barrows, all the other ones after us, have also not dug ditches. It's just how it worked.
I suppose from an aerial view, that's probably the only thing that would give it away as being not an ancient burial mound.
Yes.
Because you'd still be able to see a ditch around them.
Yeah. I'd have liked. I did think about putting a small ditch, but I don't know.
It would just fill with water.
Yeah. It's actually. This is a little bit of a clay patch, and it does get very. Oh, right. The ground gets very wet, and I think it only just dried up around it yesterday. It's pretty.
Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely fantastic. Well, thanks for giving us the grand tour, and.
I hope that's giving you some interest. Yeah. Just going to the long barrow, one thing I do, when I've had people here talking about the history of the area, which is interesting, I talk about how this is actually, we're right on the boundaries here. Top of that hill, you can't quite see it, is the Wansdyke.
Yeah.
Mm. This great defensive symbolic barrier. The road down here where my farm is, that we can see cars you come on, is actually called the Hare Path, which is the Saxon for a war path.
Yeah.
So you've actually got a demilitarised zone between the Wansdyke and the road behind it, where within the life of the churches at Alton, you had, this was the army road, which you always have a little bit back from the barrier.
Yeah.
Ah. So, 1,000 years ago, this is that sort of thing. And then you're turning round, across the road, across the field, we have a pillbox.
Yeah.
There was one just here as well, and the canal. And so, not that long ago, it was yet another defensive line.
Yeah.
Just here.
Yeah.
So, it's quite strange. We think this is a peaceful, lovely area. And, these long barrows, and there's actually two we can see on top of the hills from here.
Yeah.
They've seen all this gone, battle, so.
Yeah, of course, there's a site of a major battle up there somewhere.
Yes, just behind Adam's grave, yes. It's not, we're just, especially now, counting our blessings how peaceful it is here,
So, thanks to Tim for hosting us. That was an absolutely fascinating morning out for myself and Paul.
Yeah.
Always great to meet interesting people and learn new things, I suppose.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I really enjoyed that. He's a fascinating guy, isn't he? I don't know what it is about farmers in the Pusey Vale and their interest in history and archaeology. Because, of course, we've got his neighbour David Carson just down the road, another farmer and amateur archaeologist historian, that was a great morning out.
Yes, indeed, and that brings us to the end of another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. We will be back in a few weeks' time, a month's time, I believe, with another fascinating Wiltshire topic. I guess in this one we can wrap up, Carl.
I was sorry, I was interrupted you there, but I'm just going to say thank you to Steve Dixon again for that bit of music, the intro to the Tim Dore interview, and I don't know whether it's appropriate or not, but that piece is called Play Dead. But anyway, it's the only one that we could find that was vaguely appropriate. Of course, nobody in that long barrow is playing at being dead. But thanks to Steve for the piece of music that we use at the beginning and the end. What else? There's the website, of course, for the show notes, and you're working on that, aren't you? We're gonna spanking new website soon, possibly.
Yeah, we've got some tweets coming along, but I'm setting up a kind of podcast, Hidden Wiltshire podcast website, so it's a kind of sister to the main one, just so we've got a sort of space to develop out the multimedia type of stuff with videos and podcasts and everything. But yeah, more info on that in due course. But whatever, you'll always find what you need on the hiddenwiltshire.com website, the shop, the books, info on the podcast, all the blog posts, all the photographs, walks, everything. That will remain the sort of main hub for everything that we do.
Well, it's certainly looking good so far from what you've done, which is obviously not viewable by everybody yet, but I don't know what you call it, but the stuff you're doing in the background looks great. So that's exciting.